Well, welcome to Dial the Cosmos. And on this edition of the show, we have an author that has published quite a few books by now. I have a list of them all, and there's quite a few of them. But I'm going to read out his bio so you know a little bit about him. And then we're going to talk about his latest book, which is Paranormal: Case Files of Great Britain, Volume 4. So you can buy that. There's another three volumes underneath it. So Malcolm Robinson has been involved in UFO and paranormal research for over 40 years. He's written 12 books on the unexplained and has featured in numerous television and radio programs to do with the supernatural. He has also appeared in the documentary films such as The Pentagon, UFO Files 2022, Space Force, The Dawn of Galactic Warfare 2022, and Aliens at Loch Ness 2022. Malcolm was the very first Scottish UFO researcher to speak in the following countries: United States of America, in Nevada, in France, in Holland, in Ireland, in Shannon and Galway. Malcolm is also one of the few people on this planet who's gone down into the depths of Loch Ness in a submarine. Malcolm is also an assistant editor of Outer Limits magazine. Malcolm, that is a long list of stuff. Welcome to Dial the Cosmos.
It's a pleasure to be on your show, Dominic. Nice to be back on.
Oh, do you know, my heart jumped when I saw your new book. It's such an honor. Yeah, I mean, when I get to read books like this, they bring out the everything in me that is passionate about the paranormal. But it also allows me to talk to people like you who've got this depth of knowledge that is, well, I don't think you're second to none, really. You're the probably one of the top experts on the paranormal in this country, if not the world. So it's a real honor for me to have you on Dial the Cosmos. So let's talk about Paranormal Case Files of Great Britain, Volume 4.
Yep.
Is this your best one so far? Volume 4, is it the best out of the group, or does it stand out for any particular reason against the other three?
Not for any particular reason, I guess. It contains a lot of bizarre, weird, and wonderful stories that I've collected over the years of been immersed in this wonderful, wonderful subject of the paranormal. And these stories come to me from people who just want to get something off their chest. It can either be when I've given a lecture or coming off the back of a radio show or being featured in the newspaper. Everybody's got a story to tell. And you generally tend to find that most people, they don't know who to go to. Do they go to the police? Do they go to the airports? And they tend to suppress these stories until either somebody like myself comes along and say, "Well, why deal with this? Talk to me." And they unload to me, and as best I can, I try to do a face-to-face with them to get to know the person, to get to know the story. And the main reason that I write these books anyway is simply to get the message over to the people that, look, have a look at these subjects. These are real. These are bona fide paranormal events that just need to be looked at. There's no good, no good at all, just getting all these stories and pushing them away in a filing cabinet. Forever lost. You've got to get these stories out, Dominic, and that's what I do with these series of books. And it's just a pleasure to get these stories out and talk to you and your lovely listeners on the show.
Totally agree. I love opening conversations. I think that's what we're here for. I think we're here to discuss things and to find things, because it pushes the process forward, doesn't it, of what we don't know, because there's so much stuff. This book of yours, for instance, I see by just looking through it, cellular memory or cell memory. That stood out to me because I didn't expect to see that in there. So do you want to explain what that is and how that actually comes into this topic?
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, it probably, let's be honest, it probably isn't a paranormal subject as such. But let me tell you a wee bit why it was in the book and why I feel that it's relevant. Because it is so strange, you know. And thankfully, thank God, we've got backup testimony from doctors and nurses who can attest to this. So, what it is, some people, thank God, not all, some people who go for a heart transplant, a lung transplant, or various other medical procedures, more so if they're getting bodily parts from other deceased persons. It may have been in a road accident or whatever. We generally tend to find that sometimes this bizarre phenomena occurs, in which you may have a person who hates motorcycles, hates the smell of them, hates the look of them, would never, ever, ever go on them. And then suddenly, when he's had to go to hospital, suddenly he gets this lung or a heart from the person who rode a motorcycle. And then suddenly this person takes on this persona, takes on the very fabric of this deceased person. Suddenly, from not wanting to go on a motorcycle, he wants to buy leathers, he wants to get a bike. Then skeptics would say, well, that's chance. But it's more than chance, Dominic, because this is a phenomena that's been known about now for hundreds of years, you know, and it's very, very unusual. There's case after case, cellular memory. If any of your listeners want to type that into Google, they'll get a whole range of different cases which has affected people. The worrying part of this, I guess, is that for anybody who's gone in for a heart or a lung transplant, and God forbid, maybe say, for instance, they got the heart or a lung of a convicted someone who had passed away, a serial killer or something, would that mean that that person, the normal to goodness person, would suddenly take on the very feelings it came from this deceased serial killer? That's something to think about. And how would that work in a court of law, you know, if you use the cellular memory angle to get away with it? So all we're saying is some people take on the conditions of the donor. And we just don't know why that is, because how can memory live in the liver or the lungs or the heart?
So my understanding of cellular memory was that everybody has a in their DNA an imprint of everything they do. So, for instance, everything that you have in your life is documented in each cell of your body. And if you go through and have a transplant, you're getting a copy of somebody else's life posted into your body. Now, that sounds spectacular, doesn't it? The fact that that can happen. But I didn't know how old it was. I didn't know how far back it went, because does it Is it just for a transplant? Can it be for a blood transfusion? Can it be for somebody that has, I don't know, maybe drinks something of somebody, or eats a person, or how does it actually happen? Can it happen outside a transplant?
Well, that's a very good question. In the main, research has shown that it's effectively more the transplants from lungs and hearts, etc. But the good point is you raised, and it's quite a valid point, is of course the blood transfusion, because that would contain the DNA of the donor. And as such, one would presume that if you're going along the lines of cellular memory, which is ingrained within the very fabric of people's organs, then it stands to reason you would get to that as well with blood transfusions. There need to be a lot more research done on this, because we hear more cases from the actual organs than we do with the blood transfusion. So it's and the mechanism behind it, you know, why are we getting this, you know?
Absolutely. And I mean, is there's two questions that come to my mind. The first question is, when was the first documented case? When can we take it back till, when was it first shown?
Well, I think it was just after the very first transplant, which the year escapes me just now. I need to check that. But I think it was certainly a good couple of years after that that they started to notice these variances. Now, let's be honest, the person who's getting the lung or the heart, they're not meant to know where that came from. I.e., they may say, well, it was somebody who died in a road accident, but they generally don't get the address and the family. And it was only till people who dramatically changed in their moods and their persona that they just had to find out, it's just because I've got somebody's heart. Why am I feeling like this? So they broke the mold, they broke the barriers, and they managed to track down the family of the donor and say, yeah, that you're getting the symptoms exactly what of our brother, you know.
Absolutely. It's linked into a couple of things for me, because the first thing is transplants, because you can have corneas, kidneys, liver. Yeah, I mean, it has really become a 20th century, later 20th century phenomenon, didn't it? After Christian Barnard transplanted a heart. Yeah, it
Yes.
all started off with Christian Barnard, really. But
Yes.
but corneas and people have hands now transplanted, don't they?
Yeah.
And all sorts of stuff. And just in the news, there's a lady had a womb
That's right.
actually put in, and that's recent. That's literally as we speak, today that happened. So transplant technology is going through the roof, and so this is something we're going to come across an awful lot in the future. But could
Well,
it,
I'd just like to jump in there. I mean, I don't want
of
to
course.
frighten any of your listeners by thinking, oh my goodness, there might be somebody listening to the show who's ready for that. It does not happen all the time. It's very, very minuscule. We're probably hearing about those cases, you know, and so it's not a run-of-the-mill thing. It could, I don't know the statistics, I can't recall. It could well be maybe one in several thousand that happens to, but the fact of the matter remains is it is a legitimate phenomenon. It does happen.
Yeah, okay. And that's a good point. Don't go to bed and have nightmares over this. It's something that is happening. We recognize it's happening, but we don't know why it's happening. And cellular memory is something that I've been interested in cellular memory since I read Michael Newton's book on reincarnation. And he talked about cell memory in that book, and it talked about how past lives were stored in the memory of each cell.
I'm
Now,
glad you said that. I'm glad you said that because that's another aspect. When people get regressed under hypnotic regression and they come away with a seafaring tale, yes, I was on board this 17th century ship. It may not be them. It could be their great great grandfather, cell memory. So the cell
absolutely.
memory is surfacing from them, and they think under hypnosis it's them. It's their past life, but it's not, it's their great grandfather's.
And also, Malcolm, within that conflict, you could see that the actual soul being transferable and have lots of different dynamic of life within it. It could well be the acoustic record that we're not really sure where that is actually situated. And if the soul is a reality, then the soul would be actually jam-packed of all these blueprints of lifetimes that some of them are yet to experience, which would be quite an interesting subject to cover, wouldn't it?
Wow, that's so true. You've got me thinking about that. So yeah, it could be the DNA soul from an incarnation, from an incarnation, from it goes on, it's limitless. And my goodness me, you got me thinking on that
Well,
one.
it's a fascinating subject, because I start to think of things like spirit guides and stuff like that are really from cell memory. They don't come from somewhere else. They are actually incarnations that we hold inside of us that we can access.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. I would hope it wouldn't because I do feel that people do have their guides, etc. You know, a good friend of mine, Stephen Bird, the SBI psychic, he's wonderful. But yeah, but again, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. You're quite correct, Dominic. We've got to look over the fence. As researchers, we've got to look at alternative explanations all the time.
We have to start shifting some of the things that we're seeing, because some of the knowledge that we have is not based on anything other than just things that have been passed down. And now that science is becoming much more relevant to the paranormal, we can start experiencing things, and we can start to work out why we're experiencing things. So let's not disclude the explanations that take this out of the paranormal and into a clearer understanding for us to be able to live our lives in a different way.
I totally agree. Yeah, absolutely.
It's fascinating for me because you mean I don't particularly believe in the spirit world. I believe that there is reincarnation, but I believe that there is something that we actually don't know about that we actually transfer from one body to a next body, and that can be over many lifetimes, over many existences on many planets. And cellular memory, I think, is the key to understanding a part of that.
It's just something to be looked at, and it is one of these
Okay.
subjects that I felt should be in the book because
Yeah.
it gets people talking, it opens up people's eyes.
Absolutely. And also in Paranormal Case Files, Volume 4, there's a section on poltergeists. And I find poltergeists also very interesting. Are poltergeists real, Malcolm?
Oh, absolutely. They're not denying that poltergeists are real. Of course, there's a vast difference between a poltergeist and a haunting, as you know. Poltergeists are quite nasty. They're very vicious. They can throw things around. A lot of researchers would say, well, it's because you're dealing with a young child. Well, not so much a child. Maybe 11 from 11 to 13 years of age, going through puberty. And they're saying that it's a sexual repressed energy that's externalizing and pushing chairs over. Now, I don't agree with that. And the reason I don't agree with that is because we have a lot of troubled kids here in Great Britain. And if that was the case, that phenomena, then you'd be having poltergeists in every room in Great Britain. So I don't think it's that. I could be wrong, but I don't
Okay.
think it's sexual repressed energy that's pushing tables over and everything else. There's
Right.
the famous South Shields poltergeist case, researched by Darren Ritson and Michael Halliwell. They were dealing with these troubled husband and wife. A whole range of things were transpiring in this house near Newcastle in England. And suddenly the gentleman went, "My back, my back." And he lifted his shirt up, and you could see claw marks, like scratch marks, scraping down his back. Now, these were fresh. These were
Right.
not 2, 3 days old. These were being made right in front of the people looking at his guy's back. And this was all, again, part of the poltergeist phenomena, yeah.
Okay, so they were literally appearing out of nothing on that person's body, these scratch marks.
That's right. Skeptics might say it's some form of stigmata. You have all these mystics and all these religious people, with the holes in the hands and the marks in the head. And there is, I suppose, a condition, a medical condition that might bring that on, but I mean, that was just, I wasn't there, of course. I know Michael, I know Darren very well. They said, Malcolm, we saw this. It was incredible.
Okay. I can actually tell you, Malcolm, I've seen it and I've had it happen to me.
Wow.
So I know it's a real phenomenon. You're
Yeah.
not about to scratch yourself in the way that that happens, that those scratches hurt. They're deep and they normally come in threes. It's
Correct.
strange because you never see someone just get a single scratch.
Yeah, that's
That
correct.
they're always in threes, and it's that sort of thing that makes it stand out. And you think, how does that occur? So that's the first thing with poltergeists. Maybe they are noisy, but maybe we clatter, you know, because when we classify a ghost, I looked up the definition before I spoke to you, not because I didn't know, but because I wanted to have it confirmed.
Yeah.
But they actually say it's from a dead person. Basically, the energy of a dead person. That's what a ghost is classified as. Do you think that's necessarily so? Do you think that's where this comes from? Or could there be another explanation?
I mean, there's a number of explanations for ghosts, absolutely. They're not all cut and dried as some people would think. Some people get the impression that it's just some transparent figure floating about a room. It's not. You get ghosts of the living, people who's passed away, and they've been seen in the street, solid as anything. You get crisis ghosts, of course. I don't know if I've mentioned in a previous show, you had, well, when I lived in London, An old lady came to one of my lectures in London, and she told me what I'm about to tell you and your listeners. She said that during the war, the Second World War, when she was younger, her son was fighting the Nazi U-boat menace in the North Atlantic. So he was on one of those ships, and she was back in her home in Tottenham in North London, and she was just sitting in a chair, knitting a jersey, just knitting away. And then suddenly this instantaneous television screen just appeared in the room. And on that screen was loads of water, the sea, and one arm coming. And she knew right away that it was her son, and she could hear in her mind's eye, "Help, Mum, Mum, help, help." And she found out later, she had received a telegram from the Admiralty a few weeks later, and I think you know what's coming next. Sadly, your son is, you know, his ship was bombed, torpedoed by a U-boat, and he died on such and such, at such and such a time. Exactly, exactly the time she saw this vision, you know, so very bizarre.
That brings to my mind about time. You know, is time a linear line, or is it a circular? Does it exist? You know, is it just something that we use just to order our particular routines? You know, is time non-existent? Is everything happening at once? Which this really suggests, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is a man-made conception for sure. You know, time, we live our lives by time, by a watch, by clocks, trains, etc. And I mean, what would happen if there was no time? That's another issue.
Well, it's quite a thing that I think that as soon as we start to figure it out, then a lot of the things that we look at, and we're doctrined to think about time from the moment we're born. Yeah. Everything is actually limited to a time scale. Even though we talk about age, we talk about, you know, the years, the seasons, everything is documented into time. And I don't know if I'm capable of actually visualizing a world without time.
It'd be a very strange world for sure. I wouldn't like to be waiting on a train, but yeah.
Well, some of the football matches at the moment don't seem to be played in time, do they? They seem to have limitless time to play. But there's so much going on with that concept that without it, I just couldn't imagine how we would actually be.
Yeah, when you look at animals, etc., you know, your pets, your dogs, your cats, and I mean, do they have any concept of time? Yeah, they'll see the change in the night and day, of course, you know. But they don't know when they're going to get fed. They just hope that they're going to get fed. And so it's a different aspect with animals, for sure. They may go along with the seasons, of course, but time will be certainly different for animals as opposed to human beings.
Yeah, and I have heard it said, and it makes sense to me, that we live for heartbeats. Yeah. So once our heartbeats are up, that's it. That's our end of our existence of this particular life. And that would make sense to me too, because you see a lot of people that use a lot of heartbeats very quickly tend to go over quicker than what people that do very little, like the tortoise lives for how long? You know, 200 years? And a horse, a racehorse, may only live, what, 24 years?
Yeah, it does make you wonder, you know, again, that maybe gets back to the predestiny, you know, is your life preordained? When you're born again, that you have so many heartbeats. But if that is the case, surely you're here back on planet Earth to learn and be a better person, be a far more better human being, you know.
But then Malcolm, if time is non-existent, we've already learned everything we're going to learn. We're just relearning it.
Yeah, but some would say that maybe some people don't learn their lessons. You know, the murderers, the rapists, and people who go out to cause fear and alarm to the elderly people. Then I would like to think that when they pass over, there's some form of learning for them before they come back. You mentioned that you believe in reincarnation. I certainly do as well. You know, the great work by Ian Stevenson and with many others. It's incredible to think that there's more, apparently more, reincarnation cases in India than anywhere else in the world, which puzzles me.
Well, maybe India has a huge population and hasn't got so many distractions as maybe some of the countries in the West.
Yeah, that's a thought. I mean, that's the thing. Many countries view the paranormal and ufology and mysticism different ways. You know, Buddhism, Hindus, everybody looks at religion and the paranormal in a different light. They may talk about vimanas, spaceships, ghost rockets. Everybody has this way of saying what the paranormal is to them through the centuries. It's always been with us for sure. You know, Socrates, Plato speak about visions, ghosts, even poltergeists, you know, things being moved back in the day. So it's always been with us, and I dare say it always will in the future be with us.
And talking about different sections of our planet, do you think that we all come from the same genetic blueprint? For instance, that people that lived in Africa are so different physically from people that live in Japan or in China. You know, do you think we could have all gone through what Darwin claims as being that evolution of man? Or is there something else there which is maybe a little bit outerworldly rather than just figured on this planet?
Well, that's one of the biggest questions I've ever been asked in all my days as a paranormal researcher. And it's a cracking question, and it always will be a cracking question, because you could line up a dozen paranormal researchers and you probably might get a different answer. I'll try my best to answer it the way I see it. Of course, you may have three versions of that question. You've got Darwin, that we came from the origin of the species. We somehow crawled out the primordial soup and somehow into Nathaniel Mann, etc. The other version is that maybe life was seeded by meteorites striking ancient Earth and containing the nucleus of life. But again, that kind of falls around the Darwin theory as well, because it's bringing forward microscopic organisms to settle in pools of water in primordial Earth to extend and move on. The other option you've got is, of course, we were seeded here by extraterrestrials, that we are one big genetic experiment. And the UFOs that you're seeing in the skies today, these abductions, etc., might just be them tinkering and twisting things. And I mean, that's speculation on my part, Don.
Absolutely. It's up for conversation, isn't it? And yeah, we can also talk about Rendlesham, where Penison still to this day believes it's a time shift. Yeah, it's the time travelers that were there, and that the things that he took down in his binary and his binary code that talked about High Brasilia were all very, very real to him. And it was out of time. It was like humans had come back to 1980 Suffolk in England at Rendlesham just to come back for whatever reason. So we start to think, well, hang on, how does this all fit into the stuff that we're learning about dimensions and, you know, space and time and all the things that are now being opened up to us? There's a lot of complications there, isn't there?
Well, there certainly is. I mean, we have to bear in mind that anything that is getting verbalised or spoken to witnesses like Peniston or anybody else, they may be false on the part of the aliens, call them what you will. It's imparting that knowledge. It's a smoke screen, if you like, you know. I'm not saying that is the case, of course, but we have to be wary that not all is what it seems. Okay. In the famous Scottish case, the A70 case, when one of the witnesses, the abductees, says to the Greys, "Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this to me?" Okay. And the word they got was sanctuary. So we all know what the word sanctuary means, but why would it be used in that context? You know, at the moment, I'm rereading one of David Jacobs' books. It's all about hybrids, as he calls them. That's humans and aliens, as okay, it's like hybrids, you know, but he calls them hybrids.
Okay.
A very, very interesting book. And what he's saying is that it's all a genetic experiment. And if so, why? What is the main purpose? Is it to repopulate planet Earth with these hybrids? There's something very crazy going on, which we need to explore.
Yeah, well, you just look at the human race and you look at the different types of human being that exist on this planet at one time. You just look at them, compare them. And it's hard to think that they've all come from the same genetic soup.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we've got a lot of different species of animals and insects and what have you, but they've got their own backgrounds, so to speak. I mean, when we think about it, there's a new species of frogs and insects being found on this planet on a kind of daily basis. We don't know at all, you know. That's quite exciting that we're still finding things. When we look at the oceans of this planet, more so the Mariana Trench, one of the deepest parts of the world under the ocean, we're finding these bioluminescent fish, except these strange fish who's adapted, who have adapted to the very conditions of that the depths, you know.
Yeah, and do you think things like the Sasquatch, the Yeti, Bigfoot, do you think that's another species of creature that is able to maybe cloak itself or be able to shapeshift? Do you think these creatures exist alongside of us?
Well, I mean, obviously, I've never researched any of these cases, and I'm more comfortable speaking about stuff that I've physically researched. But all I can say about the Yeti, Sasquatch, Bigfoot, is that I certainly would tend to believe that the people who's claiming to see these things are seeing them for what they are, these bizarre beasts.
Yeah.
Yes, we've got fur back from alleged creatures that's proved to be a bear or something. But yeah, I think it's very bizarre. It's like the Loch Ness Monster or Chupacabra.
Yeah.
There are creatures out there which defy description. You know, we have Ogopogo in Canada, Lake Monster, we've got them in Russia. So are these real life physical beings, monsters, creatures, call them what you will, or as some people would say, could they be thought forms or tulpas? You know,
I was just coming back to that, Malcolm, because in your book, the Paranormal Case Files of Great Britain, Volume 4, you talk about this as a part of things like the Rake Man and the other, like the Mothman, that they come into the consciousness through manifestation, through almost like being, if we can think them up, they exist. And could it be that we create these life forms in reality?
Well, we've certainly done that. I mean, there was a Canadian UFO paranormal group called SORAT, SORRAT, I think it is, based in Canada. And they tried to see if they could create a ghost or a spirit. And they gave him a name. It was like a cavalier. They gave him a name. I gave him a family, gave him a history.
Okay.
And they sat in circle for weeks and weeks and weeks, and nothing happened, nothing happened, nothing happened, and bang, suddenly they heard this guy speaking. They saw, some of the people saw this physical being who they addressed in their mind appear in the room, and so they created him. They created this person who wasn't real. He didn't have a real life. But so it makes me wonder, especially with the Tibetan lamas and the gurus out there, you know, what they claim they can do as well, is unbelievable.
Yeah, so manifestation is a real, real situation.
It is. I mean, then again, you could say that some people using their mind to move a matchstick along a table, staring at it, move. And some people will be successful. But is that psychokinesis? They're using the power of their minds to do that, you know. So that people have an energy. People have an aura. We know this. Human beings are fantastic creatures. We only use a small percent of our brains, let's be honest. And the psychics of this world use the remaining part of that percent.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, Malcolm, but didn't I hear somebody talk about UFOs being powered by the aliens that are powering them through their mind energy? Wasn't there something said about that?
Can't recall that. It wouldn't surprise me.
Okay.
But if we're dealing with superior technological advanced creatures, aliens, call them what you will, you can't fathom out the what they have, the superior minds, the superior brains, you know. But that's fine. But then I still don't understand why they're abducting people when all these experiments have been doing it for decades after decades. Surely they've got enough genetic material. What more do they want? It can only be again along the lines of this interbreeding program, which I'm starting to think over the past few months, maybe that's what's going on here. And if that is what's going on, what is the full-time bottom line agenda on that?
And what do you think it is, Malcolm?
Well, I don't want to think what it is.
Me neither. But
It's hard to say what that is. I mean, anybody who has not read the works of David Jacobs, please do. He speaks more eloquently than I can ever do on these subjects. But yeah, that's what I think is going on, this hybridization
okay.
program.
Just give that book a quick name check again for me, please.
The David Jacobs one, yep,
Yes,
it's
please.
Walking Among Us.
Walking Among Us by David
And
Jacobs.
it's subtitled The Alien Plan to Control Humanity by David Jacobs.
That sounds very sinister and extremely interesting for me. Let's move on, Malcolm. Let's talk about a few of the things that are in your book, Paranormal Case Files of Great Britain, Volume
Yep,
4.
sure.
Right, let's talk about underwater ghosts. What are underwater ghosts?
Well, it stands to reason that if you have ghosts or spirits of people who have passed on, then it doesn't really matter the environment that people will see them in. They'll see them in air, they'll see them in water, you know, they've seen them on aircraft, for instance, you know, high in the sky, people that's passed on. So I did some research in regards to that, and there's quite a number of different things that came up. One of was, of course, the RMS Titanic, you know, as we all know, sadly that sunk on the 15th of April 1912 in the North Atlantic Ocean. And it was only 4 days into its maiden voyage when it struck the iceberg, as we all know. And sadly, you know, over 1,500 people lost their lives. Now, where this story goes is that people who, you know, other ships that's moved over. Went over that particular area, they've heard strange signals come up on, well, the radio operators have heard strange signals, one of which was saying, came up as CQD. Now, this is in the 21st century. Now, that is the old Morse code message for SOS, but they were getting CQD, which means come quick danger. And they found out that that was something that was coming from the Titanic, which had sunk in that area. So again, that goes back to time, what you said about earlier there. Is it all a time loop? Maybe they've just somehow they've stretched back and they've got the signal back in that time.
Interesting. It's a thing that I sort of looked at and thought, well, hang on, there's going to be imprints. Okay. We know about stone tape theory, which was a theory that was put out there in the 60s, wasn't it? From a book written by a person who said that everything takes in energy. We also know about psychometry with objects holding energy. So why wouldn't the energy be held in certain areas anywhere on the planet? But the one thing against underwater ghosts that I find very interesting, and I'd love to explore it more, is the fact that water cleanses energy. Anywhere where you go in the world where there's been water, it takes away a lot of the energy signatures. So would that not apply within the ocean?
You would tend to think so. I mean, some of the cases I refer to are people who, you know, scuba diving, snorkeling, and they've seen spirit people coming up towards them. And I mean, this is just something that I had to mention in the book, you know, and I give a number of examples of that. And but your point is that you know, would water not cleanse that? It's a good question because one of the cases in the book. is of an area, and well, where was it? I think it's yeah, it's in the deep. It's an aquarium type of thing. It's in the Humber Estuary in Hull, and this it's like a big fish tank. You know, it's got loads of fish and stuff like that. And there's a walkway you can people can walk underneath it, and I have a photograph which claims to show a face, or it does show a face. It's in the book. Of allegedly someone who'd passed on. Now, people would say, well, how is that possible? How is that face there? It's in all this water. It could be simulacrum. It could be pareidolia, you know, that your brain is hardwired to see something. If that photograph had been taken seconds later at a different angle, you may have not got the contours, because clearly, clearly, clearly you can see a face. Absolutely. It's so prominent. But it's just one of these crazy things, because the place is meant to be haunted as well, you know?
Okay. Pareidolia is a really interesting subject, isn't it? Because we are wired to see faces in anything, from a piece of toast all the way through to a window, because you get a lot of ghosts, don't you, looking through windows. Or looking in through windows, and you think, well, hang on, how can that be? Could that be pareidolia? You know, could that be someone seeing something that is a reflection from something else?
Absolutely.
So there's lots of questions over when we see faces, and of course, you know, the scrying, you know, the Greeks used to scry into pools of water, didn't they? And people throughout the centuries have actually seen what they claim to be. But I don't know so much about what it could be. I don't know whether it's an energy imprint into the atmosphere, whether there's certain releases like stone wall, you know, stone tape theory talks about, or whether there is an energy that we live alongside that is different. Because I've always thought, you know, for instance, I've thought that poltergeists may be another sentient being that live unseen, cloaked. Or that can actually, you know, live alongside of us until they decide to make themselves known. And the same with shadow ghosts. Have you ever come across shadow ghosts, Malcolm?
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned it in a previous book, you know, called Please Leave Us Alone, about an Irish family who were bothered by the Hat Man and shadow people. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I mean, that's another very interesting subject that I think it's still up for debate. The other thing that I came across just recently while doing some research of my own was a mimic ghost. Now, have you ever come across those?
Yes, and it's more surprising than you would think. And just for the listeners who is unsure about what that is, it's certain spirits or ghosts that, well, I'll let me give you, for instance, there was a case in Sauchie, not this famous Sauchie poltergeist, but another case, where the young girl was in the living room and she heard her mother calling her. And she said, I'll be there in a moment. Just bear with me, I'll be there in a moment. So the young girl went upstairs to find her mother. Nowhere in the house. She wasn't there. And then the mother came back from doing the shopping and she says, did you shout on me to do something about an hour ago? No, I've been away. I've been away all day. So we have, and this was a haunted house, by the way. So spirit are mimicking, they're used, somehow they replicate people's voices as if to think, oh, that's Alex or that's Sadie. You know, they can mimic people's voices. It's astonishing.
That scares the living daylights out of me, Malcolm.
And me.
Absolutely scared. It really, really does. Just to think that you could be called by a voice that you recognize, and you respond without even thinking, to find that it isn't the voice at all from the person. It's a voice that's been mimicked. And, do you know, it sends shivers down my spine, just the thought.
Because it takes it to a different level, doesn't it?
Oh, gosh, it's sinister. It's not even scary. It's just sinister. Because, you know, I looked into Alaska, and Alaska, there's over 16,000 people go missing in a year.
That's right.
How can 16,000 people, you know, that's more than Hibernian get for a home game. How, right? How can they all go missing in a year?
Well, I mean, it's a big place, Alaska, of course. It could, I mean, some of that will, of course, be fatalities and just people who want to disappear, but murders, etc. But some people would say that, because it's an expansive area, that's a fantastic opportunity for these greys or anybody else to take people from that landscape. But again, I'm only speculating.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just something open to the conversation that people can actually put in their mind. Because when I heard that figure, I thought, how could that be possible? Because these people have families, they have traceable lives, and they just vanish. How does that happen? That scares the living daylights out of me as well.
Well, one of the scary stories, well, there are many, to be honest with you, in the book was a good friend of mine who's a psychic, and he saw a demon, and that was very frightening for him, even though he's well versed in the subject. Basically, what happened was his name is Stephen Bird. And he was taking a walk down by one of the rivers. I think it was the River Forth near Stirling, and he was talking to his spirit friends. I know it sounds bizarre, but he's very, very good psychic, fantastic. And then suddenly, his spirit guide says, "Beware, something evil is about to transpire. You better be on your guard." So Stephen knew that straight away he had to be very, very careful because these, when his spirit guides are telling him this, they mean business. So he turned around in about 40, 50 yards away, there was a hedgerow. And in front of this hedgerow was like a swirling mass, a swirling concentric mass. It's like stars and everything. And then coming out of this was this horrible little fiendish being. And it started to run towards Stephen, and Stephen knew straight away, I better put a protective shield around me. So he thought of this big white light encompassing him. And then suddenly this creature, I know it sounds bizarre, but this is why we do this subject. This being ran towards him and then just disappeared. So it really, even for people like Stephen, it still gave him a fright. So it's getting back to what we were speaking about earlier, Dominic, about evil, about demons, about these entities and stuff like that. They are a nasty side to the paranormal for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing for me is that I don't know how you see it, but I like to understand it. I want to know more about it, but I also want it to be reported in duplicate. I want more than one witness. I don't. It's not I don't trust people because I love people, and I'm sure that they say exactly how things are, but I want to know what really happened. And if you
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, all these things are nice stories, not true stories, but you're right. When it comes to evidence, you need duplication. You need back. It would help, and a lot of times we don't have that. Sometimes we have that in UFO cases. We have it in ghost cases. I've said on your show before that you could have six people in a haunted room and three go, "Oh my God, look at in the corner there, the spirit standing there." And the other three will go, "What? What? I can't see anything." So, but I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, if we could get more verification on any given thing, then it would help your cause for sure.
If people have had verification, especially anyone listening, that if you've witnessed something with somebody else, get in touch, because I'm sure Malcolm would love to hear from you. I would love to hear from you. And there's going to be a volume five, I'm sure, of Paranormal Case Files of Great Britain, isn't there, Malcolm, at some point? So
Well, that is, yeah.
stories like that would be fantastic, wouldn't they? When you've got verification as well on top of it. Let me ask you about these imps in the roof.
Yeah.
What about the imps in the roof, Malcolm? Tell me about that story.
Well, basically, it's a case that came to my attention a few years ago. And I was living too far away to get involved. And the couple, the elderly couple, needed people on the ground, boots on the ground, very, very quickly. And so rather than me, traveling up and et cetera, I got to Paraforce. And Sean Cadman and Vivian Powell are involved in this case because they lived close to the area. it's a massive case. I'm not going to say too much about it on the show because I want you to buy the book. But
yeah, absolutely. Well, no, you buy the book, you can read it all. Yeah, absolutely.
But to answer your question about the imps, yeah, I mean, it was such a bizarre case. Honest to goodness, this case had it all. It's got UFOs, it's got demons, it's got people being pulled out of the bed, being scratched. You know, the hoof marks on the bedroom carpet was found as well, of like an animal, a hoofed animal. Okay. And they always heard these footsteps, it's like little children running about the loft space and stuff like that. So one of the researchers went up to have a nose, as you do, and he could not believe what he was looking at. This hideous, little, small, imp-like demon thing was astonished that he could see it. And it just suddenly took off running along the loft. And he got such a fright, he fell down, you know, and no wonder he got a fright. Now, it's getting back to your earlier question. It's a lovely story, but wouldn't it be great if we had footage of that? This is the be-all and end-all. If we could have video footage of that. But then again, people would say you've made it up on computer, you've got software, and that's true. It's so easy to manipulate that. So sometimes when it comes down to that evidence, Dominic, sometimes, irrespective of 1, 2, 3, 4 people, if you've seen something and you know you're not on drugs or anything like that, nobody will shake that. And but yeah, he saw, and it's a very rare case of imps being seen in a haunted house with UFOs out the outside, seen by other members of the street who was lived in the street. It's just such an incredible case. It happened in Nottingham, and yes. Wow.
That's well worth buying the book for, just that alone.
Well, I've got another story for you then.
Okay, well, your book is going to be gold. To people that love this stuff, right, you've got to go on Amazon and pick up Paranormal Case Files of Great Britain, Volume 4, and buy the Volume 1, 2, and 3 while you're there. Okay, Malcolm, tell us your other story, because this is going to be great too.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a good friend of mine, Alien Bill Rourke. He's a lovely guy from York in England, and he takes a lot of strange, bizarre photographs. Anyway, he was at the Outer Limits conference last year, which was held in the town of Hull in England. Okay. And in between lectures, he went into the gents' toilets. So nobody was in. Nobody was in at all. So he was washing his hands. Then he suddenly felt the right-hand side of his head go very, very cold. And then he heard this voice. It said, "You all right, mate?" And he turned around and nobody was there. And he checked all the cubicles. There was nobody in a tannoy system. Nothing was there. It wasn't until he found out later that the place was haunted. That Freedom Centre is haunted. Anyway, the story gets even more bizarre. He went to the main auditorium, and funnily enough, I was on the stage giving a lecture about the Socky Poltergeist, would you believe? I was on stage. So he joined his wife. He sat down beside his wife, and he sat down by a lady called Kathy Cogliano from Massachusetts, who was over from the States to attend the conference. So they're watching me on stage, and this is what happened next. Suddenly, this disembodied arm from the tips of the fingers just to the elbow, nothing else, just an arm, appeared in front of their knees. It slowly moved from right to left in front of them. You could have reached out and grabbed it. You could have reached out and grabbed it. They didn't notice, say it was an old man or a young man's hand, but they could clearly see the skin. There were no rings on the fingers. At the very elbow, it just kind of tapered away. It was just like smoky, you know, you couldn't see the rest of it. And then it just moved away. Now, that was seen by Bill, seen by Kathy Cogliano, who wrote it up for me for the book.
Okay.
Now, Vic never, that's Bill's wife, Victoria, she never saw it. All she saw was a ball of light, which was quite bizarre. Now, the thing is, Bill has had a number of crazy things happen to him over the years. And one time he was at the Lysander Arms pub, which is a pub in Rockcliffe in York in England, and he was cycling back, and it was a horrible rainy night. The incessant rain was coming down. Now, he did have a UFO experience on that journey home, which is too long-winded to go in here, but I want to tell you and your listeners about what happened after he saw these UFOs. Suddenly became disorientated, and he found himself in a part of York which he didn't recognise. He'd never been there before. And he got off the bike, and he says, "Where the bloody hell am I?" And the rain was thundering down, and he found himself in this little lane. There were trees to the left and trees to the right. It wasn't a road. It was just a little lane. It goes between houses. How did I get here? And then suddenly at the bottom of the lane, he saw this black caped figure, looked feminine in appearance, and a big hood, big cape right down to the ground. He never saw any feet. And it was slowly making its way up this pathway. Now, it wasn't walking like you or I, where the shoulders would dip. It was like floating just centimeters above the surface of this pathway. And he said, "Well, Christ, this is strange. What's going on here?" And he tried to talk to this figure, but he got no response. So he got his bicycle light and he shone it into the hood, and there were no face, just blackness. So he stood to let this figure go by him, and the rain was battering down, and he says, "Malcolm, this figure never got wet. There were no wetness associated with it. Rain did not appear to be wetting this fabric. And when she was gliding above the puddles on the pathway, there was no displacement of the water or anything like that." It was at that point, excuse me, he decided to, "I better take a photograph here. Nobody will believe what I'm seeing." So he reached for his camera, and you know what I'm going to say. As soon as he got the camera trained on this figure, the figure just disappeared and was gone. And again, no evidence, just a lovely story.
Yeah.
Now, also with Bill, we all love our pets. You know, we love our dogs, our cats, etc. And he and his wife Vic had this lovely little dog called Rocky. And it was half Chihuahua, it was half King Charles. It was probably about the size of a terrier. And a couple of days after the poor wee dog had passed away, Vic, his wife, Bill's wife, was the first to see him. And then Bill started seeing him in different parts of the house. You could hear scratching noises coming up from the foot of the bed and also some of the living room furniture, scratching noises that wee Rocky was prone to do when he was alive. And sometimes when Bill was lying in bed, you could feel something jumping up onto the bed, and just you could feel the springs coming down, etc., padding about his legs. On another occasion, he was at the top of the stairs. He looked down the stairs, and there was wee Rocky, his wee dog who had passed away a few days prior to this, cocking its head as if to say, "You take me out for a walk." And he went down. He says, "Oh my God, right, I'm going to grab it. So as he walked down to try and grab his wee dead dog, it just disappeared. Now, these are stories that I'm pretty, pretty sure a lot of your listeners will say, "Yeah, I can relate to that. This happened to me, or my auntie's had this happen to her." And this is why we love this subject so much, Dominic, because it's not just ghosts of people. It's ghosts of animals that is very, very important as well. It's a great comfort to me, knowing that there is this continuity after physical material death.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing, isn't it? And I've come to know what you've just described as imprints.
Yes.
And I'm absolutely sure that the imprints of energy remains. And it's all a part of this equation with time and energy and thought and manifestation. All these things are linked some way, because it's always we're seeing things that we want to see. We're feeling things that we want to feel. But it doesn't explain the things that when we walk into a building, we feel it, don't we? We know, like that conference center you went to in Hull.
Yeah.
You can feel it when you walk in, can't you? There's an atmosphere. You can go with it.
Absolutely. I mean, you're totally right there, Dominic. I've said it before, and I spoke to someone who experienced this, but on a different level. And what I mean by that was, he went to a friend's house, and they were, "Oh, nice to see you. In you come. Yes, nice to see you." All pleasant and friendly, but as soon as my friend went in that living room, oh my God, what an atmosphere. Anyway, it turned out that they had a vicious row, 5 minutes before my friend went to their door. So they put on a nice friendly face for him, but he could sense the animosity. And this is why you're correct when you say there's this, it's like a fabric of where people's emotions have impregnated into the very fabric of the building. You know, that pub in Kenfig in Wales, you know, the music, the clinking of glasses, the voices, nobody was there. But yeah, that did happen, and it's impregnated into the very fabric of the old stones.
Yeah, so there's something that we do not know, but there is something. And we're just finding out more and more. And your book, the one that we've been talking about, Paranormal Case Files of Great Britain, Volume 4, goes into great lot of detail about a lot of fascinating subjects. And I'm sure that people will find it very, very interesting to actually go and read that book. What formats is it in, Malcolm, and where can they purchase it?
Yeah, it's in most formats in the sense that it's on Kindle, it's on paperback, it's also in hardback as well, and that can be purchased via Amazon, and that can either be here in the UK or any Amazon platform across Europe.
So they just literally search Malcolm Robinson, Paranormal Case Files of Great Britain, and you'll come up, and all your other books will come up too, won't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's the reason, as I said, the reason I write these books is it's not to for any self-glorification. It's not that at all. It's purely to get all these wonderful stories out. People don't need to believe a word of it if they don't want to. All I can say is all these books contain what I believe is very honest, reliable stories that people can warm to. People can say, well, yeah, I know I can. That happened to a friend of mine, you know. So it's a big, big jigsaw puzzle. These books are relevant, and I just hope that people will enjoy them.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely sure they'll have great, great fun reading them. I'm sure that they'll discover them for themselves and explore some of the things that you talk about in more depth, you know, after they've read the book and become very much more understanding of these subjects, because I'm sure the paranormal is going to be the new normal as we become less ignorant.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd also like to say that I don't believe everything that comes to my door, of course. You know, I'm still very, very skeptical when it comes to people reporting ghosts and poltergeists until the evidence is so overwhelming that, you know, what else could it be? So we still go into any case skeptical. But as I say, for me personally, here in this year, I honestly believe a number of things. First of all, we're dealing with some form of non-human intelligence. It's always been with us. I'm talking about, you know, UFOs and aliens. I believe in the continuity of the physical after physical material death, that we will all see our loved ones that's gone before. And, you know, for me personally, after over 40, 50 years of researching this subject, I still think there's a lot to learn, and I'm not an expert. I just, as someone who just is so damn inquisitive.
And if somebody had a story and they wanted to share it with you, how could they do that, Malcolm?
Yeah, I would urge anybody who would like to share some of their stories or photographs, etc., to drop me an email either through your show, Dominic, or alternatively, you can email me at malcyspi@yahoo.com. Now, I'll spell that. That's malcyspi@yahoo.com. I'd love to hear from you.
Okay. So, Malcolm, it's been an absolute pleasure. This hour goes so fast. I knew it would. As soon as we started talking, I knew it would go so real, real fast. Thank you. Thank you for doing the work that you do. Thank you for being as approachable as you are. And thank you for spending your time talking to people about the things that you've investigated and experienced.
It's been a great pleasure. And I just love speaking to people as